Public Radio, 88.9 FM, the broadcast service of Morgan State University, WEAA, Baltimore.
Good evening and welcome to the Blacktop Exchange Sports Report on Morgan State University Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM. I'm Jerry Bembry. On my left, Ali Danois. On my right, David Steele. Today's show, we're going to have Claude Johnson, the executive director of the Black Fives Foundation, a group that looks at blacks in basketball prior to the integration of the NBA.
All right, fellas. Well, one of the fantastic things about this show, as you know, is we don't sit here and rant and rave and yell and scream about the Ravens' third-string quarterback. We talk about the important elements of sports and how it blends into society. We talk about history. We talk about commerce. We talk about law. We blend in so many elements of what sports truly is. And I think our next guest really embodies the beauty of what we do and our conversations and what sports really about. Our next guest is Claude Johnson. He's an author, historian, writer, and entrepreneur, as well as the founder and executive director of the not-for-profit Black Fives Foundation, whose mission is to use the pre-1950 history of African-American basketball teams to teach life lessons while honoring its pioneers and their descendants. Recently, through his foundation, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, home of the Brooklyn Nets, who we previously talked about, permanently installed Claude's compilation of historical photographic images of African-American basketball pioneers through its arena concourse. Claude is a fascinating guy, gentlemen. I mean, he had a 20-year corporate career. He's held management and executive positions at places like IBM, American Express, NBA Properties, Nike, and others. He has a Bachelor of Science degree in Civil Engineering and Economics from Carnegie Mellon University and a Master's in Science in Mechanical Engineering from Stanford University. Claude is one of those dudes that makes you feel dumb when you talk to him. it's my pleasure to bring on Claude, who was a colleague of mine when I was a senior editor at Bounce Magazine, working with some fantastic guys. And Claude was a regular contributor there. His work has been featured in Slam Magazine, his website, blackfives.org, blackfives.com. He's been Associated Press News, Jay-Z's Life and Times, The Brian Lehrer Show, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Sports Illustrated. Y'all know him as Joe the Policeman from the What's Going Down episode of That's My Mama. But ladies and gentlemen, seriously, it's my pleasure to bring on Claude Johnson. Claude, welcome to the Blacktop Exchange Sports Report.
Thank you very much. Y'all have me cracking up, man. That's pretty funny. And I have to tell you that if you want to feel dumb, marry someone like I did who is from Howard University. That person... That's how I get made to feel dumb.
Claude, it's our honor and our privilege to have you here. And I want to start talking about, and we can go, backwards from there, but talk about this fantastic exhibition that the New York Historical Society has that you have curated. The exhibit is going to run through July, I believe. Talk about the exhibit, how this thing all came together, and just what's happening at the New York Historical Society that you've been involved with the Black Fives Project.
Well, thanks, first of all, for having me on. I really appreciate it. And Ali, thank you on a personal level, because it's been fun working with you and knowing you and being in touch all these years. And so the New York Historical Society, I mean, this is the oldest museum in New York City, and they approached us and asked if we had some artifacts and items and things that we could display. They asked us what we had, and if we had something, would we be willing to do it? And so about a year and a half, really almost 2 years ago, we started this journey of putting together the first ever museum exhibition on the Black Fives era, which is this period that goes from early 1900s, 1904, all the way through the racial integration of the NBA in 1950. And we picked 1904 because that's the year that basketball was introduced to African Americans for the first time on a wide-scale organized basis, and that's credited to a man named Edwin Bancroft Henderson, who was a black gym teacher from Washington, D.C.'s segregated public school system. He ended up, he learned the game actually at a summer course at Harvard University. And he came back to his school children, his pupils, and he thought that basketball would be something that would take off. And he was right. And that was in 1904. And then over time, there were first purely amateur teams. Then it morphed into a semi-pro type of business model, and eventually a fully professional business model with guaranteed contracts that were full year and exclusive. And that led all the way up to the NBA, and there was a lot in between. And we focus on the full narrative, not just a bunch of items. There's over 150, close to 200 rare and unique items in this show. Some of which have never before been seen. Some are the only one of their kind. We also talk about how this exhibition and the items in it and the basketball history weaves into the cultural history and the cultural progression of Black America over that time period. So it's very exciting, and it's also a labor of love. So I definitely think that I'm really pleased. But I really want visitors to, more than anything, I want the visitors to be pleased and to get an understanding finally about this period.
This is the Blacktop Exchange Sports Report on Morgan State University, WEAA 88.9 FM. Claude, I'm sure that, and you said these are rare artifacts, I'm sure it had to be very difficult to find these 150 items that you have on exhibit at the New York Historical Society. How did you come about acquiring these items?
Well, what's very interesting is that it wasn't as hard as one might think. And that's because when I started doing this, which was in 1996, which at the time I was working at NBA Properties, it's when they celebrated their 50th anniversary. They did a bunch of throwbacks like Fort Wayne Pistons and South Philadelphia Hebrew Association and all those other retro jerseys. That's when that all exploded. But what was going on is that I realized that there were dozens of African-American teams that existed prior to the NBA, but they weren't really highlighting any of those. So I began to do research, and I began to find out that nobody knew anything. The Hall of Fame didn't know anything. The archives at the league didn't know anything. The Library of Congress and other archives and repositories didn't know. So I went on my own journey, and I found myself in the basement of places like the Schomburg, the Spingarn Library, and other places where you can go look at microfilm or personal folders of different people's papers, like the Henderson papers. And what I also started to do was I started looking on eBay. And you can go on eBay and set up these searches, which once you set them up, you get alerted every time something pops up. And for years, nobody even understood this history. I was out there trying to promote it, hype it up. Everybody was like, I don't get it. And so I was able to go onto eBay and just get a lot of things, maybe the majority of the things that I've ever acquired off of eBay, because nobody knew what they had, or even more accurately, people just didn't care because they didn't see how it fit in. And so, eventually we got some donations from family members, some people that just had stuff that said, here, you should check this out, help us figure out a way to, take care of it. And some things, they can get more costly, but it's not really what one might think. And so, I feel like a good thing has happened, that eBay, does its job. But also, I was willing to pay, what it was worth to me. So I never tried to undercut somebody. I just always bid what I felt that, I was willing to pay for it, even if I were competing against somebody else. And I think that's the way you should do it. But I always, just owned the other bidders. And I don't know, what else there is to say about it, other than that I don't think there's anybody else out there even trying to gather this kind of a collection. And I'm happy for that, but I also know that this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are many more addicts out there where grandpa or great granddad had a trunk. Nobody knows what's in it. And this gives us an opportunity to tell people and to show people what you have out there it's really worth something, the history, the object, and the stories that go with it.
Claude, what's been the reaction from people who have seen the exhibit, who have learned about the what your project through through your website, and even from the people that used to be with the NBA, to all the things that you've gathered? Because basketball has not had that same sort of grasp of its history, certainly among African Americans, that baseball has through the Negro Leagues. What's been the reaction once they see everything on the at the display?
Well, the first question, it's been extremely positive. We got a full-page review in the New York Times museum section, which is just incredibly rare just to even get in the museum section, let alone to get a full-page review. So there must be something about it that's grabbing people's attention, and it's also striking a real chord with folks. I like to think of it as, you know, if you put your love out there as a labor of love, the heartstrings resonate, and I think that's evident when you walk in. But also, the individual patrons who come in, they seem to have gotten a bump in traffic at the museum. People are coming in, and when they come in, they have to designate why they're, you know, what they're coming to see, because there's lots of exhibitions there, and many folks are coming in and saying, "We're coming to see basketball. We heard about basketball." So that's part one. And then part two is the Major League Baseball and the Negro Leagues go way back to the 1800s, so it's a little bit more natural for them to embrace each other over the years, because so many Negro Leagues, former Negro Leagues players, ended up in the Major Leagues, whereas very few of these Black Fives era players ended up in the NBA, and because it was just past their time by the time the league was formed. But what's interesting is the NBA knows about our efforts partly through what the Barclays Center and the Nets did last year with that installation of the images, and they did a lot of recognition events around that. But also, since I used to work at the league, I'm friends with many of the people who are still there, including Adam Silver, who's the new commissioner. And I've always dreamed of going in there and talking to them about possibly one day taking some of these teams and putting them on as retro, let's say Black History Month night, or it could be any night, doesn't have to be February, where they commemorate, let's say, the New York Rens by putting that uniform on the New York Knicks, or the Los Angeles Red Devils, on the Clippers, for example, and so on. And one of the things that I did over all that time, which is kind of between the lines, is that when I discovered all these teams, I actually went out, because of my licensing background, I knew how to do it, and trademarked the names and logos of all those teams that I felt would one day be important or interesting. And we went to the league, and we gave them a presentation and said we had about 8 NBA teams that overlap with these Black Fives era teams. And, sometimes you can have all the right answers, but the timing is wrong. I think it's at some point the timing will be right, and you just have to be poised, keep pushing, be nice, have a good selling proposition, make sure everybody makes money. And, we hope that not only that, but eventually it would also raise the visibility, and then we could use that history and that visibility to make a difference with kids, because that's ultimately, where this is all going, is how do we use all this to engage youth? Whenever I sign one of my books, I always write, "Basketball brings us together." And then the next thing I write is, "Make history now," because that's our slogan. And I think that, for all of us, we all should be following that slogan, because all of us have a chance to do that every moment.
You are tuned in to the Blacktop Exchange Radio Sports Report on WEAA 88.9 FM. And as Jerry said, we are in the midst of our spring fundraising drive. So please give us a call, 410-319-8888. Please help support what we do here at the Blacktop Exchange Sports Report. Pick up the phone, give us a call. It doesn't have to be $100. It doesn't have to be $500. We'd love you if it was $1,000. But if you got $5.
We have Claude Johnson on the line of the Black Fives exhibit. There's an exhibit at the New York Historical Society. And Claude, I want to ask you, you mentioned all these items you've acquired on eBay. What's the one item that you have that you just surprised to see, or it just have special value to you in that exhibit?
Well, thank you. I think that probably one of the items that's the most rare is you all know, like in NBA arenas, when you sit up there and at halftime or during timeouts, those guys shoot T-shirts up into the stands, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Or they give away stuff. Well, that's called an in-arena giveaway or a fan giveaway. And the earliest known version of a fan giveaway is this this medal, a medallion that was given away in 1915 by an African-American promoter of a team called the New York Incorporators. And it was to promote a game between the Incorporators and Howard University. Actually, between the team was called the St. Christopher Club. It eventually became the Incorporators, but at that time it was known as the St. Christopher Club. And they were playing Howard for what was known as the National Championship, the Colored Basketball World Championship. And box holders and ladies, in quotes, in the ad, were given a gold basketball, which was really a gold-colored medallion that was stamped in metal, and it was an old lace basketball, and it had St. Christopher versus Howard on it, and it was attached to a silk ribbon with a pin on it that a lady or a box holder could pin either to their lapel or to their hat or something else. And that's the oldest known in-arena giveaway at all that exists. And that was between two black teams. It was for an event at the venue called the Manhattan Casino, which ironically or not ironically was at 155th and 8th in Manhattan. And it, basketball heads know that that's also the same exact intersection for Rucker Park. It's one thing to read about an event or an occurrence in the newspaper or in the Schomburg, in the microfilm, and then to actually see something come to life from that period in front of your eyes and to be able to share that with the public, it doesn't really get any better than that. So that's probably the most coveted item, but then, it's a tie because there's a lot of other things like that too.
Claude, I kind of just wanted to touch on this entrepreneurial spirit. When I talk to these young guys that watch and kind of are so infatuated with the NBA, I say, you have to think that there is an individual who actually owns that franchise. There is somebody that pays LeBron James' salary. And I'm always fascinated by the trailblazers like, the Cumberland Posies, mm-hmm. and, the founder of the Harlem Renaissance and yes. Just that business model. Talk a little bit about these gentlemen and their businesses and what they were up against and some of the amazing accomplishments that they were able to do with these organizations and these teams in an era that people don't really know about.
Yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, and there's a bunch of stories, and then there's subtext, and we get into all of that at the exhibition. But what people don't know is that at the very beginning, since basketball was invented in the context of the YMCA, it was really considered to be linked to religion or to spirituality. And in fact, the YMCA logo still says mind, body, spirit, and that's their motto. But when basketball was first being played, the authorities that governed over basketball, they really did not like the idea of getting paid to play, because it was almost like getting paid to pray. It would just seem awkward. It seemed too awkward to them for that to happen. You should be playing it because of mind, body, spirit reasons, which meant camaraderie and teamwork and social, affiliation, and also, meaningful community building. So when these teams started becoming so popular, and also around that time, black music became popular because of the gramophone. So these enterprising black promoters would say, okay, here's an empty ballroom. Why don't we bring in an orchestra, a ragtime orchestra, or jazz, or blues, and then we can have a dance before, during, and after, meaning before the game, during halftime, and after the game, and we can attract more people that way. And so all these early ads said basketball and dance. And so, that explains the mystery of why these ads would say that. And so that was really a black innovation as well, marrying music to the game is an African-American innovation out of necessity, because both parties were looking for places to play at the time, because there were so many, you know, restrictions on facilities because many of them were whites only. So when that all opened up, partly because of music, partly because of collaborations with white, you know, ballroom owners and others, it led to more popularity, more ticket sales, which made players and managers say, wait a minute, I want to cut. And so when that happened, you know, at first there was a great deal of resistance, even within the black community, against that, because everybody wanted to, you know, do like the white folks do, you know, and to be pure and to abide by, you know, and try to emulate those Victorian ideals. But eventually there were some pioneers like Cumberland Posey in Pittsburgh, who, you know, his dad was a shipbuilder. So by the time he became old enough, Cumberland Posey Jr. was already savvy in business, and he knew exactly what to do. Plus, he was an excellent athlete. He was considered the best ball player of his time. But, you know, guys like him, Will Anthony Madden, who I mentioned, they had to fight through some of the flack just to get to the point where, even though they didn't quite succeed at it, or they had to hide the fact that they were truly paying their players, Bob Douglas came in as the owner of the Wrens, and when he did it, by the time he did it, he had such integrity, such personal charm and integrity, that everybody was like, okay, fine. Even through the Depression era, they were making big money, because they would go out to Wisconsin and Illinois and Ohio and upstate New York and Indiana and Massachusetts and Connecticut, and they would play other teams, mostly against white teams. And when they came out to that town, they were literally like a mobile economy, because then folks from around that town would come to the center of that town or to that particular locale, and they would spend their money with local merchants. They would gamble on the side, take bets on the game. Everybody was happy. So it wasn't like the Wrens or other teams like that would come around and have to fight their way into town. They were welcome, and they were advertised ahead of time. You know, here comes the colored champion.
Wow, that's amazing. Hey, Claude, that's all the time we have. We want to thank Claude Johnson, our guest. He is in charge of executive director of the Black Fives Foundation. There is a Black Fives exhibition at the New York Historical Society that'll be open to July 20th. I can't wait to get to New York to check it out. I know Ali's going this weekend. But, Claude, thank you so much for joining us on the show. We really, really appreciate it.
You're welcome. And I just want to put in one plug for Morgan State, because Morgan State beat the Wrens in 1929.
Wow. Okay.
All right. So that's a reason to donate, you know, during their pledge drive right there.
All right,
there
that's
you
great.
Go. I like
Coach
that
Coach Edward Hurt, wasn't
that's
it?
Right. Claude, thank you so much. We really appreciate
thank
it. Have
you.
A good night,
You're
Claude.
Welcome.
Take
welcome.
Care.
You too. Take care.
This is the Black Top Exchange Sports Report on WEAA 88.9 FM.